Switching gears a little bit from nutrients to metals, I'm going to talk about hexavalent chromium at a Superfund site and cycling in the environment. So chromium comes from a variety of sources, and these may appear to be three unrelated pictures and the Chrysler building, but they all required chromium. So from stainless steel, chromium is an important alloy that prevents rust, to the pigment in yellow paints. So there are two forms of chromium in the environment, and one is chromite, which is chromium-3, and that's thought to be less toxic and generally non-mobile. Another is hexavalent chromium, made famous by Aaron Brockovich, and that's chrome-8, and it's highly mobile and very carcinogenic. So there are a variety of ways that chrome-8 can be reduced to chromite, but there's really only one form in the environment that chromite can be oxidized to chrome-8, and that's through manganese oxide minerals and then anthropogenic processes. So the goals of my experiment are to really figure out what's happening with chromate. It's thought to be highly soluble in the environment, but is this actually occurring? And I'll look at a Superfund site where they've had a portion of the chromate, which is very mobile, but some of it's remaining at the site. So my question is to try and figure out why it's so stable, and I've done this through a variety of techniques, including stirred flow, ICP-MS, and XFs. So the mighty manganese oxides. Manganese oxides are probably the strongest oxidant in the environment, and they occur as coatings on iron oxides. So they're well deserved of their title, and they have a high absorption capacity for a variety of things, such as lead, uranium, arsenic, copper, and, as I found out, chromium. So here's a soil profile, and you can see the manganese oxides is a fine coating down here. And this is important because you can see from these my micrographs. So red is iron, and then green is manganese. Red is chromium. So red is chromium, blue is iron, and the green is manganese. And the manganese oxides occur as coatings. You can see so these redder particles, and then they're green manganese oxides. But then the chromium is absorbed to the manganese oxides, which is right next to the iron oxides, which is in close proximity to the manganese oxides. So there's a high potential even for absorbed chromium onto iron oxides to be oxidized into chromium-6 by manganese oxides. So, and this is what's happening in the reaction. We have chromite and manganese-4, we produce chromium-6 and manganese-2. And this is really important because chromium is one of the most prevalent metal contaminants at EPA Superfund sites. It's especially common in New Jersey. There are 105 Superfund sites, and it's found at almost all of them. So I like to term it the greening of the Garden State. So New Jersey is the Garden State, but there aren't very many farms left. And what happens is when you have these spring rains, especially after winter, it mobilizes the chromium-6, and these come to the surface as a crust. And you can have, in extreme cases like here, you'll have actually yellow pools of runoff water. So even at Liberty State Park, what happened was chromium ores were imported, and when the ores were extracted, they used a process which created chromium-6, and they thought they had removed all the chromium-6, but this wasn't the case because there are different solubilities of chromium-6. So if you look at this site, it was actually a Superfund site, and it's this really gravelly material which was perfect to fill in wetlands. The downside of that is that it still contains chromium-6. So they had to go in and clean up over 120 sites right across the river from New York City and New Jersey. And the limit in soil is 25 ppm for chromium-6. And some of these sites had over 24,000 ppm of chromium-6. And they found out that it was much more easily mobilized than they thought. So my specific site is the newest addition to the EPA Superfund site list in New Jersey. And in 1983, there was a large rupture. This was an electroplating facility, so they used chromic acid, which has an extremely low pH, around 0. And it was stored in this tank, and a valve ruptured overnight. And the chromic acid seeped through the concrete floor into the groundwater. So they tried to recover some of the chromium, but as you can see, 2 years later, when pumping efforts ceased, they had only recovered less than a third of the chromium-6 that had been spilled. So what happened was the EPA thought, or NJDEP was in charge of it at this point, and the person in charge thought that everything would be okay, that as the chromium 6 groundwater plume moved through the soil, that natural processes, as we saw, would reduce the chromium 6 to chromium 3, and it wouldn't be an issue. And there were no drinking water wells in the area, so we didn't foresee a problem. The issue, though, was less than 5 years later, here's a shuttered firehouse, and when there would be heavy rains, the firemen would notice that the basement was filling up with a green liquid. So what happened was, here was the electroplating facility here, and it was on the top of a hill. And the groundwater plume moved down here. Here's the firehouse where they first noticed this green plume. And as it entered the Passaic River, sure, it was reducing to chromium 3 there. But all along, you have all these houses which have basements. And the basements are the perfect place for groundwater to enter, as water evaporates from the groundwater and these old cinder blocks. There's actually a pool for moisture to come out. So the water evaporates from the groundwater and leaves behind any dissolved salts. And in this case, the dissolved salts were chromium. So a lot of basements along this down gradient groundwater flow path had chromium crystals forming in the basements. So at this point, the EPA stepped in, and actually when the site was being evaluated for consideration as a Superfund site, the EPA's arm is the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, estimated that if you spent a significant amount of time in your basement and had the presence of these yellow chromium crystals, you were faced with a 1 in 3 cancer risk. And that says these chromium crystals are aerosolized as dust. They can be inhaled in your lungs, and it acts as a Trojan horse and does not nice things to your DNA. So it was included, and here are all the drums of other fun things that were left at the site when the electroplating facility declared bankruptcy. So there are two approaches that I have, and one is to look at the solution, but also I want to look at the solid surface sample, and I do this through the use of synchrotron radiation. So chromium is a really easy element to work with because we have this nice pre-edge peak. So chromium 6 has a 5993. You have this really nice indicative peak, whereas when it's 100% chromium 3, you notice there's an absence of a peak. And what we can do is we can run a bunch of different samples which have varying concentrations of chromium 3 and chromium 6, and the height of this pre-edge peak can be linearly calibrated, which is very nice, to the concentration of chromium 6 in the solid surface sample. So what I did is that when the EPA was installing some injection wells to try and clean up the site, I was able to obtain soil cores from that to look at what's actually happening below the ground. So here is the well that I obtained my soil cores from, and you can see that the concentration of chromium 6 in the groundwater is 16,300 ppm, which is extremely high. So here's the chromium 6 standard that I ran at the synchrotron, and here's the chromium 3 with no pre-edge peak, and then here is my soil from a depth. The core was 16 to 18 feet deep, and you notice there's a really high in this indicative chromium 6 peak. So you can see not surprisingly, there was over 1,000 ppm of chromium 6 in the soil. So to look at what was happening in the soil environment, I used various electrolyte solutions, and then place my soil in a stirred flow reactor and pump these through and collect them in a fraction collector. So I could monitor over time what was happening to the solid surface sample. And then I heat treated them with EDTA, and that's a fun experiment that a lot of us did in high school, where chromium 3 complexes and creates a really pretty purple color. And then I ran that through a column which separates, there's a polymer in here. So the chromium 3 passes through at a slower rate than the chromium 6, and then I use an ICP-MS to analyze the solution samples. So at first I ran my samples for 24 hours, and what I was finding out was a large slug of chromium was coming off very quickly. So to look on a finer time scale, I reran some samples at a more fine scale resolution of time. And you can see phosphate is a stronger desorbent because chromium is bound in an anionic form than chloride. And the chromium 3 was quite stable as predicted. So then at these different time frames, I coupled the solution data with the solid surface sample. So you can see that here's the untreated sample, which we saw in that slide. with the standards. And then the purple is the 24-hour sample. So you can see over time, the amount of chromium 6 is decreasing and the proportion of chromium 3 is increasing. But it's a very slow process. We have an initial very mobile slug that comes off, but over time, more chromium 6 is still coming off. And this is really what we're seeking to answer. The question is, what processors are controlling this more slow release of chromium 6 from the solid surface sample? And again, within organic acid oxalic, which is common in the soil environment, we notice a similar trend where the amount of proportion of chromium 6 is decreasing, but very slowly. And one hypothesis I have for this is that as the chromic acid leached through the concrete floor where it was contained, it has such a low pH that it could have dissolved some of the calcium in the concrete. And chromium can form these calcium-bearing minerals such as edendrite and hydrocalcite. So, and what leads me to suspect this is that so to clean a lot of the metals, you use hydrochloric acid and sulfuric acid. And it was a pretty sloppy operation at this electroplating facility, and they spilled a lot of sulfuric acid. So in the groundwater table, there's a large source of sulfate. So there are two things that can happen. Is some of the chromium 6 can be bound as these calcium-bearing minerals, and then what's mobile, there's a potential for an in-situ remediation, and that's through sulfate reduction. So microbes can use sulfate as an electron source, and that will result in the reduction of chromium 6 to chromium 3. And to try this out, so the EPA that was one of the reasons they dug these wells, was to look at, rather than, there was really no way to contain the groundwater plume at this point, but they wanted to try treatments. So you can stimulate microbial growth, but at this site, the concentrations are actually too high for that to occur. So there are chemical methods, such as sulfate reduction, and I wanted to test this out on my sample at a small scale to see if it would work. And at 24 hours here, you notice there's a complete reduction of chromium 6, basically. So it's a really promising method for them. And you can see they actually test piloted this a little bit, and the numbers are really hard to read. Sorry, but this well where my soil core came from started out with almost 300,000 ppb of chromium 6. And when they sampled 3 months later after injection of low levels of sulfate, it was down almost 100,000 ppb, which is really promising. So my current research is really focusing on trying to figure out exactly what's happening with this second, less mobile, but still, it's still coming, desorbing from the soil surface of chromium 6. And I'm doing that through a variety of techniques, such as microscopy and rerunning more samples at the synchrotron to look at what's happening on the solid surface sample. So thank you all for your attention and all of my group's help. So the EPA actually went in and excavated to the groundwater surface, which was around 14 feet at the time they did that. So right below the excavation is the highest concentration. So that's why I chose the 16-foot sample. There's a shallow bedrock table at 22 feet, which they weren't able to drill through. So I analyzed the cores all from around 14 feet, which is where the clean fill is, to the 22-foot bedrock gap. And the chromium is actually, the problem they encountered is it's leached through this, the bedrock cap isn't completely impermeable. So it's leached through this bedrock cap. But the highest concentration is right below the clean fill, where they stopped excavating. And the EPA representative basically said that they had it was too difficult to excavate below the groundwater table, so they thought they were doing the most good with the amount of money they had. It's an orphan site, so the company declared bankruptcy, and CERCLA is no longer funded, so that's what they could do. So, okay. In this site or in general?
In general.
Yeah. So once the chromium 6 is dissolved into, once it's dissolved, it's very mobile. So it's these plumes are can be easily transported long distances. The promising thing is often when it reaches a surface water body or something like that, it's fairly quickly reduced. Most of the chromium in the environment is chromium 3. And that was the hope with the, when they stopped pumping in 1985, was that the groundwater plume would hit this marshy area in the river and that natural processes would cause reduction of chromium 6 to chromium 3. But this sort of the basement problem wasn't predicted. Yeah, so the EPA actually went in, and the temporary solution is they sealed the basements with a polymer coating and installed sump pumps and told people to try and minimize the amount of time they spent in their basements. Yeah.